Surrender now, Cheetah, and spare yourself another humiliating defeat.
But Wonder Woman, darling, what fun would that be?
Done it without your help, Major Trevor.
Priscilla Rich, I covered at least one issue with her. I wish her costume weren't available at Party City every October. It would be nice if she had something a little more creative. I've only covered the first appearance of her so far on my show. It's an interesting take for a character, especially in the 40s, that she has this dissociative identity. I need to read more of her, to be perfectly honest. She's the classic, but there is a reason that most incarnations nowadays follow Barbara Minerva instead of her. She really is just kind of a crazy lady in a cat costume, which doesn't pose much of a threat, really, to a superpowered Amazon.
This is, they touch on a lot of stuff with regards to Reformation Island and the Amazon's relationship to regular humanity. They really harp on how the Amazons are not inherently superhuman. They've just trained to such a great degree that they can do things that regular humans cannot do. And so because Cheetah spends time with the Amazons, I'm wondering if maybe the reason why Cheetah is able to compete with Wonder Woman is something in her psychological makeup has allowed her to attain that sort of Amazonian ability. It doesn't really make a lot of sense that she puts on a cat uniform and all of a sudden she's faster than Wonder Woman and can match her for blows.
Yeah, without any powers, it's a little... I mean, she's not Batman, people. I can understand why she's an iconic Wonder Woman villain. Definitely memorable. She has an iconic look. And if you can replicate it for $25.99 at Party City every October, I'm not going to stop harping on that. I'm not. Just face it.
Hola. It's been over a year and a half since our last episode, which came a year after the prior episode. I was a solid DC Comics fan for decades, and I maintain my love for Wonder Woman, but my passion for both has largely been snuffed in the 21st century. I stopped collecting Wonder Woman comics a year into her 2006 relaunch, and I've been disappointed and disinterested in every attempted relaunch since. Meanwhile, my ability to care about the DC universe was diminished every month of every year Dan Didio was the publisher, and even with his final departure, I doubt I'll ever recover. Given that DC is proving to be bullies who value shipping comics over people's lives in the midst of a pandemic, and would also gut Diamond Distribution after a good 40 years of service, has made me hate DC with an even greater passion of late. The Wonder Woman movie and her appearances in other DCEU films like Dawn of Justice and Justice League have been a singular bright spot for me with regards to new material in the entirety of the 20-teens. I even hated her interpretation in the Justice League action cartoon, and I've yet to bother with the Bloodlines original animated film, seeing it as fruit from the poisonous tree of the New 52. At the very least, we had Wonder Woman 1984 to look forward to, with a trailer that had me cheering and gave me chills. It looked to actually improve on Patty Jenkins' first film, with the absence of a sword in favor of heavy lasso play, indicating the amazing Amazon would be even truer to her classic comics interpretation. We were supposed to see it last fall, but Warner Brothers was so proud that they turned it into their summer tentpole blockbuster, and then COVID-19 hit. There was briefly speculation that the film might be consigned to streaming only, but currently has shifted from June to August to October release, assuming movie theaters still exist by then. Whatever happens, in some form, we will eventually see a major motion picture sequel to Wonder Woman. The first time a superheroine has ever claimed such a feat. Aside from Blade, it would also be the first time anyone other than a white male superhero got a sequel. And it'll be the cinematic debut of Wonder Woman's most recognizable villainess, the Cheetah. This was not always the case. Cheetah's first appearance was on August 18, 1943, in Wonder Woman number 6, nearly 2 years after Princess Diana reached man's world. Aside from her routine run-ins with the Axis powers as a collective, her most consistent foe was the Baroness Paula von Gunther, and she'd already encountered Dr. Psycho, Ares, and Dr. Poison, often multiple times. If you crack open the Wonder Woman omnibus, Cheetah doesn't show up until page 616, and all of her appearances are in 2 issues across 2 months, totaling 4 connecting short stories. They went all in on Cheetah for this one moment, telling her paper-thin origin story, and then 3 rambling follow-ups before forgetting all about her for a spell. However, Wonder Woman did have a short-lived newspaper strip that lasted about as long as our gap between episodes. IDW put out a collection of the strips a few years back, and I started reading it but never finished. The strip mostly adapted key stories from the comics, but in a more claustrophobic and awkward format and in black and white. The Cheetah strip went another way, as her first crossover to mass media. beginning on November the 20th, 1944. One thing that is kind of neat about the strip adaptations is that there's something of a work print, with lots of deleted scenes from the more familiar comic versions. For instance, the newspaper strip recounts the very first meeting of wealthy socialite Priscilla Rich and Diana Prince. Rich tries to bully General Darnell's secretary with her connections and social standing, but failing that, uses the lithe speed of a cat to leap over a boundary and literally push over Prince, the presumptuous fool. It is revealed for the first time here that the OG Zsa Zsa Gabor was the daughter of Albion Rich, chairman of the financial board, and was herself president of the Junior League and chairman of women's charities. The superheroine Black Canary may have owed a lot of her looks to platinum starlet Veronica Lake, but it's clear from her peekaboo tresses that artist Harry G. Peter was photo-referencing the actress years before Dinah Drake was born. Priscilla Rich was no joke either, as she really did surprise and disable the disguised Amazon, who noted she was strong as a young cyclone. Rich wanted Daddy Darnell to order Wonder Woman to help with her charity gala, and though Darnell had no such authority over the Amazon, her close friend Dinah Prince was able to help with the arrangements. However, the night of the gala, Prince was working late with her crush Steve Trevor, who then invited her out to go dancing. Adding considerably to Rich's motivation in the comic, Priscilla had been heavily complimented by her society friends for her Wonder Woman coup, only to be seemingly stood up. To buy time with an increasingly hostile audience, last year's leading debutante was talked into performing her ballet dance, Death of a Swan. Outside of her usual circles, nobody cared about Priscilla Rich, and popularity meant so much to Prill. Besides hardly receiving any applause, Rich realized that she wasn't such a wonderful dancer after all. Propped up by empty affirmations, she made a fool of herself before a public shouting demands for Wonder Woman. Meanwhile, Steve remembered he had tickets to Wonder Woman's show, which made Diana realize he'd forgotten as well. Diana's inexplicable appearance at the gala to introduce Wonder Woman on stage makes a lot more sense when the strip explains that she was supposed to be Wonder Woman's ride in the first place. After all, Prince has the cover for the princess's lateness and excuse her own absence from Steve. Following many demonstrations of strength and speed for the audience, it's Priscilla Rich who convinces Wonder Woman to become a modern Harry Houdini, heavily bound and dumped into a water tank. With her ego in shambles after the Amazon's late arrival, you can better understand Rich's manipulations and murderous raid. Rich's plan to steal the lasso of truth and secretly add it to the bonds to prevent Diana's successful escape from drowning are more clearly premeditated here. Of course, Diana is no stranger to expert-level bondage, and after some sexually suggestive contortions, she's liberated. This is only after Prill actively prevented a stampede of concerned audience members from helping Diana, assuring them that it would only ruin her act. I think part of what hurt the newspaper strip was its often line-for-line recreations of comic stories. But that doesn't mean there weren't any major deviations. In the comics, Rich is further infuriated when her gentleman friend blows off a planned date to hang out with Wonder Woman. In a moment straight out of a Sam Raimi movie or two, Rich has a psychotic break and begins having a conversation with her newly manifested alter ego. Compelled to turn a cheetah skin rug into a bizarre costume, the cheetah identity explains to Rich that she is the manifestation of her rage and sense of inferiority. As the cheetah, Rich frames her boyfriend Courtney Darling and Wonder Woman with the theft of $100,000 in charity money, then tries to drown them in a grain silo. Steve Trevor and Etta Candy follow Cheetah's trail, but fail to help matters at all. In fact, they become liabilities when Cheetah decides to set the silo on fire, just to be on the safe side. Regardless, Wonder Woman saved everybody but Cheetah, who appeared to perish in the fire. Things go differently in the strip. Here, the audience recognizes the lasso murder attempt for exactly what it was, and chase Priscilla into a theater property room in pursuit of justice. Rich has been publicly ruined by her jealous action, and barring the door, is startled by the pre-existing cheetah costume. Rich still has her breakdown, only in a dressing room mirror, and this time wants to scratch the eyes out of the entire public that had turned on her. While strengthening Rich's motivation, it also makes explicitly clear that the cheetah persona was already manifesting earlier in the evening, and it was she who plotted the murder. There were two more cheetah stories in Wonder Woman number 6, where Rich became a more sympathetic figure in trying to control her murderous alter ego, but didn't play as well as Harvey Dent or Kurt Connors. It still appeared as though Rich was a murderess before becoming Cheetah, and it's only in the strip where it is explained that her core identity was seemingly blameless. Cheetah can even control Priscilla's memories so that she cannot recall the existence of her Cheetah identity. Not unlike early Hulk stories, Cheetah is a monster who despises and tries to completely destroy her human identity. The Cheetah is made Priscilla Rich's enemy here, not merely an ally out of pocket. Again, exclusive through the newspaper strip, Wonder Woman returns to the stage to sing Warrior's Lament, while boys swoon in the audience and the Holiday College Band provides backing. That is, until Cheetah sets fire to the theater. Steve saves a small child from being crushed in the ensuing panic, while Wonder Woman saves them both. The band played on as the princess smashed a wall to create an exit route for all, but had to return to save the band. Cheetah was stalking amidst the inferno and pounced on the Amazon.
Ye gods, a human cheetah. Sorry, I've no time for wrestling.
In only a few panels, Wonder Woman accidentally tossed Cheetah down a spiral stairwell like she was next to nothing. The next strip offers a cliffhanger where Wonder Woman assumes the Holiday Girls had escaped, only to call the college and be told firefighters were sifting through the ruins in search of their bodies. In a novel flashback, it is revealed Cheetah had lured the girls down the stairwell before Diana had arrived. Cheetah trapped them in the cellar and wrapped each in turn on the head with a lead pipe. When Cheetah was thrown down the stairwell, she decided the Holiday Girls did not deserve to die quickly in the fire, so she rescued them for future use. We already knew from the comics that Priscilla Rich had a secret dungeon underneath her mansion, but the strip teaches us that there's an exterior cave leading to old slave smuggling tunnels alongside the subterranean rooms that had been established. Both Cheetah stories have Wonder Woman all but knowing that Priscilla Rich is the Cheetah until finally confirming, but it happens much quicker here. Priscilla Rich and the Holiday Girls' remains fail to turn up at the theater, and Etta manages to send Diana a partial mental message. Wonder Woman puts two and two together before anyone makes a reference to this human cheetah as though that were her full legal name. Princess Diana goes to the Rich estate, and her maid Annette lets Wonder Woman up to her mistress's room for a brief interrogation. However, doubt is cast when the lasso of truth fails to compel Priscilla Rich to speak on matters Cheetah had erased from her mind. Priscilla remains evasive, uncooperative, and clearly off her rocker. But Diana is surprised when she doesn't appear to be the Cheetah after all. While I'm thinking about it, I should point out that one major visual difference in Harry Peter's newspaper work is extensive use of Zippotone, which gives Cheetah's costume extra texture. It often meant for a very muddy reproduction of the strip overall, though. Another nice touch is that Priscilla has dark Zippotone shadows around her eyes, only when she's actively possessed by the Cheetah. Also, while it's strongly hinted at in the original comics, Cheetah's misogyny and broader misanthropy are spelled out in the strip, with lines like,
"Ah, all women should be gagged."
For some reason, writer William Moulton Marston thought a cheetah growl sounded like Charlie Brown getting his kite caught in a tree because she args through these early stories. Priscilla Rich runs a 106-degree fever and is kept under opiates for days. Etta manages another mental message to Wonder Woman, but the amazing Amazon can't save the Holiday Girls from starving if she can't find them. The cheetah eventually reasserts herself, knocking out her nurse, and carries food down to her captives, or as she prefers to call them, slaves. I hear Lindsey Graham has similar inclinations. Cheetah forces Etta to draft a ransom note in exchange for food, with her demand being the lasso. Thanks to interference from Steve Trevor, Etta's mental message warning of a trap is missed by Diana Prince. Not that it wasn't a duh to begin with. Wonder Woman fashions a facsimile lasso, then swings from tree to tree like Tarzan along the Saxon Woods path to Bear Cave. Sure enough, she collides with the cheetah, who thought she would ambush the Amazon from above with her sword. They have a multi-strip tussle, but Wonder Woman gives in when Cheetah threatens to lynch one of the Holiday Girls with one of those rigs they used to use in movies to jerk people by the ankles up a tree. Fake captured and bound by a not her actual lasso, Wonder Woman gets led to Cheetah's dungeon before she's the one who pounces. Turnabout is the constant in Marston's stories, so before you know it, Wonder Woman gets electrocuted saving the Holiday Girls, then has to construct a shock treatment machine that causes them to be subsumed by their second secret animal selves so that Cheetah can turn them into her crazy murder gang. She even has ready-made costumes to match the animal personas, so Etta becomes a pig, Eve becomes a peacock, and so on. Don't get me started on the creepy psychosexual Etta Piglet stuff. Eventually, so many people have disappeared that Major Trevor is pursuing Diana Prince, who is pursuing Wonder Woman, who is pursuing Priscilla Rich, who is reported missing by Albion Rich, to General Darnell, who then teams up with Steve. After fruitless searching of Saxon Woods caves, the pair end up in Rich's woods, where they spot Cheetah's animals preparing to toss Pearl's nurse off Pirate Cliff. Wonder Woman had to rip the tree that she'd been tied to by her real lasso that she had tried to secret as a wound anklet so that she could leap through the air to catch the nurse before she was killed by her fall. Look, I know that was a lot of sentence, but did you really want more paragraphs covering this stuff? Once the nurse is secured, Wonder Woman has to climb back up Pirate Cliff, and Cheetah tries to drop a small boulder on her. It's easily blocked by a bracelet, and as she's done throughout her classic adventures, Diana can't help but sass her about it.
"Oh, did something hit me? Cheetah must be throwing bouquets."
The Amazon gives Cheetah a black eye, so that even when she tries to run away and toss her costume, the shiner is still easily recognizable on Priscilla Rich. Diana Prince and Wonder Woman are both called as witnesses to Priscilla Rich's trial, and over objections from the prosecution and Judge Friendly, successfully get Rich committed rather than jailed. This drew Diane into another court case and a story that ate up most of the strip's remaining life. A few more odds and sides before we move on. The Cheetah is often shown reliant solely on her claws in later incarnations, but Priscilla Rich prominently wields a sword on her debut cover, which has finally been recalled in recent Barbara Minerva Cheetah appearances. It's worth noting that Rich also uses a pair of automatic pistols while capturing Wonder Woman and her boyfriend Courtney Darling in that first comic story, and plays bullets and bracelets with them in the strip, in case any modern creators would like to go full Trinity from The Matrix sometime. The newspaper strip establishes that Sissy Prill, as Cheetah calls her, is a smoker, if that's your kink, and she even uses one of those old-timey cigarette holders like a proper villainess. I very much prefer the extended narrative of the comic strip, which ran nearly 40 pages of the IDW collection, something like four times the length of the first comic book story. That said, it's exhausting, with way too many developments and far too much shady BDSM material. But Cheetah still put across better here than in the four continuous comic book stories. Speaking of which, since the Cheetah appeared to perish in the Capital Grain Company fire, when Diana Prince meets Priscilla Rich at an exclusive beauty club, she thinks it's proof that the two were not the same person. Not so fast, Princess, as Cheetah's employing a blindfolded stenographer with ESP to record the thoughts of military women and wives while they're getting their hair done to sell to the Japanese. Do you need a moment to digest that? Okay. So Gail Young used her extrasensory perception as a party trick at Priscilla's request, only for Miss Rich to be infuriated both by her display of power and by the knowledge that Gail's brother, Major Jerry Young, had been supposedly stolen by their mutual girlfriend, Brenda. Look, Prill was still with Courtney Darling in the last story of the same issue, so I'm getting Brenda's back on this one. Gail freaked when her ESP picked up murderous intent in the room, but that didn't save her and Brenda from getting wrapped with a blackjack by Cheetah in Brenda's car. Cheetah then supposedly dressed the ladies in zebra suits, because cheetahs prey on zebras, see? But the color is screwed up and made them orange, like tiger suits. Whatever, they're working the beauty parlor scam, and then before long, Wonder Woman is chasing Cheetah and Gail in her invisible plane to a Japanese battleship, which the Amazon, of course, sinks with her bare hands. Then she takes out a tank, allows herself to be captured to meet the bondage quota, breaks free, frights a bunch of buck-tooth stereotypes with swords on a conference room table, turns the Nipponese into a human ladder, climbs up to the roof to Steve waiting in her plane, Edda sends a mental message to say she'd broken down a door at the beauty salon to find Gail and Brenda, but then Cheetah breaks into the message because she's learned how to send her own mental messages to warn Wonder Woman off from queering any more of her schemes. Then Steve creepily points to a revolver in his palm and says, "This is my answer to anybody who threatens you." The princess retorts, "Bullets have never solved a human problem yet. The Cheetah is only half of some girl's personality. I've got to find the other half and put them together properly." And so we're on to the third story in Wonder Woman number 6. Yeah, this is all one comic. No, I'm starting to get a headache too. Sergeant Dude is a male chauvinist who thinks Wonder Woman is a scam. So she accepts various challenges from him in Steve's office and of course ends up sopping his man tears. The princess chalks it all up to Amazonian training. Moving the goalposts, Sergeant Dude then selects a team of women's world record holders to compete against Paula's former slave girls on Paradise Island. This affords the Cheetah the opportunity to replace the high hurdles champion and travel to Wonder Woman's home. However, Gail's ESP strikes again, so she stows away on the invisible plane to protect Diana. She likely needn't have bothered, since Paula's freshly trained Amazons are so superior to the outsiders, they even dominate with chains around their ankles. Cheetah, as the hurdler Kay Carlton, insists on racing Paula without the chains, and takes an early lead, but has to cheat when Paula starts gaining on her. The cheating was called out, but Paula and Diana agreed that she made such marvelous time that the one win for the American should stand. The superior condescension just made Cheetah hate them all the more. She tried to set a trap and gun down the princess, but ended up growling for forgiveness as Kay over the misunderstanding. That night, Cheetah stalked the palace wielding her most consistent ability, bludgeoning chicks in the back of the head, this time with some sort of Amazonian truncheon lifted from the guard she'd brained. Clearly, one other exceptional ability shown in both the comics and newspapers was that the Cheetah could creep so silently that even Amazons could not detect her presence in the same room unless she was directly in their sight. This helped Cheetah steal Aphrodite's girdle, club the queen, and abscond with both. She'd engaged in some sort of trial by combat with Diana, which even with the girdle's added power lasted less than 2 pages. Diana managed to recover the girdle, and when Cheetah tried to drop a boulder on Hippolyte's head, the princess caught that too. Finally, Cheetah is captured and her identity as Priscilla Rich confirmed. As part of her lasso-induced confession, she even dubs the Rich Estate's underground passages My Cheetah's Den. So item one of the differences between Cheetah and Catwoman is that Cheetah has her own bat cave. Priscilla Rich begged to be trained in Amazon prison on Reform Island, who, by the way, beat Sergeant Dute's supposed all-champs by 131-5. It seems like a happy ending, except everyone seemed to forget that both the real Kay Carlton and later Gail Young were each given a potion by Cheetah that erased their entire memories forever. Also, he saw Cheetah Claws lunging at Wonder Woman on the cover of Sensation Comics number 22 12 days earlier. That's right. According to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, Sensation was released on August the 3rd or maybe the 6th, somewhere in between, of 1943, predating her canonical first appearance sometime between the 14th and 18th. If so, that must have confused the heck out of readers. There's a brief recap of Cheetah's origin and a longer one for the previous story. So way to spoil the ending of a book out in 2 weeks. Anyway, before the Amazons could have her, Diana had to bring her back to the U.S. so she could free her various slaves and make restitution to her victims. The second Cheetah was a former slave named Sandra, who turned on her mistress and tried to frame her for the theft of a high-tech electricity-firing submarine. We still don't have one of those nearly 80 years later. It was dubbed the Wonder Woman. We're still waiting for a second one of those, too. October, I hear. By the way, Exhibit A of how Cheetah is too similar to Catwoman is that she likes to crack a whip on people in these stories. And also, like Selena, there's an unambiguous sexual component to that. Did I say there was a second Cheetah? Psych. It was the real Cheetah the whole time, just using Sandra to pretend like she'd made a face turn. All the slaves were soon back in their zebra costumes, correctly colored this time. They piloted the Wonder Woman sub, which the actual Wonder Woman pursued with Edda and Priscilla. So of course all three end up electrocuted and taken aboard. Diana gets chained up and forced to dance, which she intentionally does badly, provoking Cheetah to do her own hoofing. Unless it's just in everyone's interest to butter up the mistress, the Cheetah's apparently as great a dancer as Priscilla Rich was a bad one in the newspaper strip. In fact, the heavy praise soothes the savage beast so much, Priscilla manages to take control back from the Cheetah. However, Cheetah still manages to wreck the sub, so Diana has to swim out to raise it.
I'm a human propeller that can be attached at any angle. I ought to patent myself.
For some reason, Diana keeps Priscilla's dual identity from Edda, but not from Trevor or Darnell. While it's not mentioned, I certainly hope Kay and Gail's memories were recovered before Prill was packed off the Reform Island, presumably. Oh, bother. It looks like I'm going to have to call Roy for this next one. Okay, after the CBS telefilm The New Original Wonder Woman aired in November of 1975, it was picked up for series the following year. As it was set during World War II, DC Comics decided to parallel the show and the comic, and so it too reset to 1942. The Cheetah then appeared in the April 1977 cover-dated Wonder Woman number 230, in a story by Martin Pasco, Jose Delbo, and Vince Coletta. Now, I know, and you know, that Cheetah debuted in 1943, but the only way this story halfway fits into continuity is by setting it either between the Wonder Woman number 6 stories, before Sensation number 22, or maybe just after, depending on which continuity conflicts stress you out the most. How's that headache coming along? After all the patented Marston Peter insanity, the 70s take is almost crushingly bland, especially with Vinny going full Coletta on the inks. The Junior League Committee for War Work hosts a dinner with the President and Mrs. Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Also attending are the most glamorous debutante in Chevy Chase, heiress Priscilla Rich, and the very FDR critical isolationist Washington Sentinel political columnist Maxwell Stanhope. The latter produces a hidden blade from within his cane and tries to impale the President. Wonder Woman stops him, but her appearance triggers the return of the Cheetah. In her exceedingly brief absence, fang-like wrist projectiles dubbed Cheetah Claws were added to her small arsenal. Cheetah nearly rips the throat out of some poor tour guide on a sightseeing boat in Georgetown just to attract Wonder Woman's attention. While claw projectiles and bracelets occupy the Amazon, Cheetah knocks her off the boat. In the drink, the water slows down Diana's reflexes, and one claw hits her right below the tiara. Maybe that's why she added the downward point in the post-crisis redesign. Cheetah figured out from the constant involvement of Steve Trevor that he must be closely tied to Wonder Woman. And after days of surveilling the women in his orbit, the indelible ink on the claw visible on Yeoman Prince's brow gives her away. Instead of slitting Prince's throat in her sleep, she sets up a convoluted plan through Priscilla Rich to blow up Wonder Woman with an exploding camera while she films a war bond PSA. None of that made use of knowing Diana Prince's secret identity. And in fact, since Cheetah used the diary to keep track of her plan, it was actually Priscilla Rich who exploited the discovery. In order to stop Wonder Woman from triggering Cheetah, Rich hypnotizes the naive yeoman into forgetting that she is Wonder Woman. However, war hero Steve Trevor takes the missing Wonder Woman's place in the PSA. So Rich has to negate her hypnotism of Yeoman Prince to restore Wonder Woman, which then triggers Cheetah, who has to be overcome to save Steve. At the end of the story, Wonder Woman still knows Priscilla is the Cheetah and intends to take her to Transformation Island. So maybe Diana Newprill was Cheetah before she pretended to be Kay Carlton? And that disguises why she didn't recognize Priscilla? Or maybe Prill was still in Washington on her restitution tour? And the story takes place before, after, or during Sensation number 22? Look, I'm giving you options here, not answers. None of this stuff is even in continuity anymore. Who cares, really? Given that we lost both scripter Marty Pasco and editor Denny O'Neill this year, I thought I would read the editorial material from the Wonder Words. Here we are with another letterless letters page and yet another edition of the new old Wonder Woman. As of this writing, we are still awaiting reader response to the new direction introduced in this magazine in issue number 229. We expect to be able to publish the first such letter in this department next issue. So far, we've used this vamp till ready space to introduce you to the television counterparts of our amazing Amazon and her boyfriend, Linda Carter and Lyle Waggoner, respectively. We thought that this time out, we'd use this page to familiarize our newer readers with the creative personnel behind the Amazon Princess. Denny O'Neill brings extensive experience as a writer and editor to his role as story editor of Wonder Woman. For almost 12 years, Denny has been regarded by his colleagues in the comics field as one of the most talented writers working in the medium. He has scripted numerous DC features in addition to having worked at various times for Marvel, Charlton, and Warren. The 1970 incarnation of Green Lantern co-starring Green Arrow, produced in collaboration with Julia Schwartz and Neil Adams, is one of the most frequently awarded features in comics history. Denny is very familiar with our favorite Amazon, having written several of her adventures as well as editing this magazine for several issues in 1971. But Denny's work extends far beyond the comic field. He is the author of numerous short stories, published in Amazing, Fantastic, and Elderly Queens Mystery Magazine, among other periodicals, and several books, among them a novel, The Bite of Monsters, and The Secret Origins of the DC Superheroes. He's been a contributor to numerous national magazines, including Show, Penthouse, High Times, Viva, Publishers Weekly, and We. He is currently an editorial consultant for Ballantine Books. A tourist born in 1939, Denny makes his home in Manhattan's Greenwich Village, just a few blocks south of Martin Pasco. Marty has been the scripter of the amazing Amazon for over 2 years, having started as WW's regular writer with issue number 218. The 23-year-old writer has been scripting for DC since 1973, after working as a newspaper columnist in his hometown in New Jersey, and writing comic material and text features for a variety of publishers. A former theater student at Northwestern University, Marty keeps busy with a wide range of work in the entertainment field when not writing Superman, WW, or The Metal Men. He's directed over 24 stage productions for university and little theater companies in New Jersey and Illinois, and acted in many more, as well as on spoken word records and in educational films. After working as a production assistant and writer of advertising copy for several low-budget exploitation films, Marty is now at work on a screenplay for a forthcoming feature film. Given the clear effort put into Cheetah in August of 1943, it's odd that she should then disappear for a while. Even accounting for over 4 months of daily newspaper action, Cheetah still took more than a year off between appearances. Cheetah seemed to join an all-star collective of Wonder Woman villains in October 1944's number 36, but those were just actors portraying the fiends under the command of Red Fitz, a single-installment baddie. The only thing really notable about the appearance is that it establishes that it is public knowledge that Priscilla Rich is the Cheetah. So maybe the newspaper strip's trial informed the comic somehow, since only the military had seemed to know that fact before. In the second Wonder Woman omnibus, you have to swing all the way back to page 580 for Cheetah's next appearance in June 1945's Comic Cavalcade number 11. In a story credited to Joy Murchison, Mala mentally radios Diana Prince to inform her that Priscilla has gone missing on Reform Island. As it happens, Mala provided Priscilla with a daily newspaper, even while testing her loving submission in the absence of a restraining Venus girdle. The paper reported that a popular society girl dancer cousin of Rich's named Claudia was to appear at the Crocodero, and even underscored her relation to the notorious Cheetah. In the meantime, a Cheetah costume washed up on the beach, and Mala blamed herself for the apparent suicide. To the surprise of no one, Cheetah had actually stowed away on the invisible plane, was detected, and knocked around when Diana took the plane for a spin. Wonder Woman dropped her off at the nearest police station, and her entire trip to and from Paradise Island was so fast that she was able to return to the cab she'd secretly abandoned en route to a science conference at Holiday College. However, during the conference, Rich bribed a guard for fresh clothes, dolled herself up, seduced the guard from her cell, pinched his revolver and keys, pistol whipped him, and escaped. Oh yeah, we're definitely back to actual Golden Age storytelling. Not that cubic zirconium stuff. The cheetah attacks her supposedly identical cousin, even though Claudia is an orange-tinged strawberry blonde and Priscilla is a canary yellow blonde. Still, they apparently can only be told apart by their eye color, so Priscilla fools Claudia's own mother with contact lenses. In case you were wondering, Claudia's eyes are brown and Priscilla's are green, as stated in her Who's Who entry. Anyway, Steve gives his angel a ride to the Crocodero, and it's obvious to Diana that she's seeing Cheetah dance again. Geez, what kind of Elaine Bennis moves does Priscilla have when she's not mind-jacked? So Diana falls for the contact lens play backstage, and that bit where she gets hypnotized in the 70s comic is given veracity. Claudia puts Diana in a Venus girdle, then drops a Mickey in Steve's drink and calls him a sissy until he sucks it all down. Next, Cheetah commands Wonder Woman to carry her, Steve, and Claudia to Cheetah's den, where she makes the princess stand with one foot on a wire in a dungeon cell over an oil pit that she sets on fire and forces them to remain until after her midnight performance at the Crocodero. However, Wonder Woman sends a mental image to Etta Candy, who borrows a propeller plane from Professor Hot Air to fly from Holiday College to the Rich Estate, where she breaks into the mansion to steal the key to the Venus girdle from Priscilla Rich's dresser, exactly where Cheetah said she would leave it. Etta makes her way to the dungeon, tosses the key, Wonder Woman catches it in her teeth, a recently awakened Steve unlocks the girdle, lashes himself and Claudia to Diana so she can leap from the wire to the dungeon bars, rip them loose, and escape, all with no burns or smoke inhalation, because comics. Last page, gang, and I have to say Crocodero again. Cheetah tries to play the brown-eyed card, but Diana literally grabs her by the waist and shakes her till the contacts falls out of her full head. Priscilla conveniently resurfaces, bemoaning her inability to reform. Diana has faith in her, despite how horrible she felt under the compulsion of a bad person. And a spectral Venus promises that henceforth her girdle will only compel those under loving authority, not hateful loons like Cheetah. Again, thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, we can jump to February 1969's DC Special No. 3, featuring a previously unpublished story likely intended for 1947's Comics Cavalcade No. 24. It doesn't appear to have made it into this year's The Golden Age Omnibus Volume 4, which ends on comics from 1949 written by Robert Kaniger, so they're basically in the Silver Age by the end. The Harry G. Peter art is unmistakable, although much looser and cleaner than usual, suggesting perhaps a more contemporary inker? Without clarification from DC, the story credit on the Cheetah's Thought Prisoners is debatable. However, certain tells in the story would lead me to believe that this is one of Kaniger's yarns.
Priscilla Rich's presumably deceased uncle left her $3 million in 1947 money. That's roughly $34.5 million today. And Judge Strait orders her return from Reform Island to claim it. Wonder Woman is unreachable, but Steve Trevor is able to produce the reformed former Baroness Paula von Gunther to the court. Paula mental radios the Queen, who agrees to allow Priscilla's return to address the matter. Paula traveled to Paradise Island for Priscilla, removing her Venus girdle for fear people would take advantage of her submission in man's world. Priscilla fears recidivism, but Paula has a new invention that, in the paraphrased words of Marshall Mathers, makes it so Priscilla is whatever Paula says she is. If Paula pictures a submissive Priscilla in a Venus girdle, the green thought ray will make sure that's how Priscilla will act. However, on the plane ride to man's world, Priscilla can't resist playing with the thought prism headband. She pictures herself dominating Paula as the Cheetah, which interacts with how Paula viewed Priscilla, thus releasing the actual Cheetah. The villainess then pushes Paula out of the plane, but Wonder Woman happened by with prisoners in tow, lassoed to her own invisible plane, and manages to rescue Paula. Diana then turns the plane over to Paula as she leaps onto Priscilla's plane and forces it to land. Cheetah pretends to be Priscilla back in control. They go before Judge Strait, but the money goes to Rich's father as her guardian since she's still incarcerated. Cheetah is angry that men are taking away her money, and still controlling Paula begins another reign of terror. Cheetah mind controls a bunch of women to become her Cheetah army, then uses them to raid Beta Lambda Sorority House and expands her army with the captive Holiday Girls. They in turn take over a dance party, then kidnap a bunch of millionaires for ransom. Diana and Steve struggle to catch the Cheetah, since she uses her green ray to disguise herself. However, Diana finally traces the threat back to Paula and Priscilla, but is rendered powerless when she is made to believe that she's been struck by a shrink ray. Luckily, Steve Trevor comes in through the side door and shoots Cheetah in the tiara, destroying its power. Diana and Priscilla both agree that she needs to do a lot more time on Reform Island before she's fit to be free. So, what do you think about my Robert Kaniger guess now? The final Golden Age Cheetah story was in 1948's Wonder Woman number 28. But I'm sorry, sisters. Villainy Incorporated is its own episode. What's worse is that since I don't currently have a copy of the Golden Age Omnibus Volume 4, through no fault of my own, I assure you, I had to go digging through my short boxes. I finally located my copy of 2002's Wonder Woman 80-page giant, from the brief period when DC were putting together square-bound facsimiles of their giant annuals format from olden times. I know they wanted a sampling of a few eras, but three of the four stories reprinted were by the same creative team spanning 6 years, and two were from 1959 alone. This would have been a perfect opportunity to reprint those lost Harry G. P. or Cheetah stories, which only turned up once each in 1969 and 1971, respectively. I guess it was too much to include them in that Cheetah trade from earlier this year, either. Anyway, the Giant Wonder Woman annual describes Villainy Incorporated as Wonder Woman's most deadly foes unite to wreak havoc on the Amazon princess and all those she holds dear. The tale is credited to William Moulton Marston and Harry G. Peter. My short Cheetah-centric version of the events is that the Saturnian Evilus from Comet Cavalcade number 22 manages to trick Mala as she's being processed on Transformation Island, then liberates other prisoners there. A bunch are truly reformed and refuse to give up their Venus girdles, but Cheetah isn't one of them. I'm firmly of the belief that Priscilla Rich is irredeemable and only plays on the Amazon's sympathies to stay out of the American prison system. The group of assorted villainesses manage to overthrow Hippolyte and the Amazons briefly, but Wonder Woman and others sort them out. Cheetah's contributions are extremely modest. She helps to tie up Hippolyte, drops an ineffectual boulder on Diana, and slaps a random Amazon in the head with a fiery chain. That last bit seemed to set the amazing Amazon off, because a few panels later, she's got two hands on Cheetah's throat and is swinging her around like a club. For some reason in my printing, Cheetah's head covering falls off to reveal flowing brown hair. That's it then. This is a 36-page, three-chapter epic, and the Cheetah's part is done partway through the second chapter. It unintentionally sets up a hierarchy of Wonder Woman rogues. Because of the eight members of Villainy Incorporated, only four progress from here. These are not the final appearances of Priscilla Rich, but this is where the DC multiverse starts muddying everything up. You see, all of these stories are meant to take place on Earth 2, even though they came out first, because whichever version of a DC character is publishing right now takes precedence. These days, we're down to Earth 0. I guess it'll be Earth negative 1 if the comic industry survives the 20s. Officially, the Earth 2 Cheetah leaps from 1948 all the way to 1985's Crisis on Infinite Earths number 5, a near 40-year gap. As a further insult, it's a non-speaking role in one of those enormous George Perez crowd scenes, where she's just standing around with other villains. The same scene is repeated in Infinity Incorporated number 22, where there's a single panel of Cheetah walking, if you really needed to see her badly drawn by a young Todd McFarlane. A year earlier in Infinity Inc. number 9, we got a Fury flashback image of the Cheetah by Jerry Ordway in his prime. The original Cheetah's very last official appearance is in Crisis number 9, another silent crowd scene with other villains. At least she angled for quality cover placement? Wait a minute, you may be asking yourself, dear listener. Didn't Frank say there were two lost Cheetah stories? It's true that we're not quite finished with the warehouse finds, since I wanted to end this episode on a better note than Marv Wolfman and Roy Thomas allowed for. Someone went through the Harry G. Peter files in 1971 and turned up another unpublished Cheetah tale that finally saw print as a backup in Diana Prince as Wonder Woman number 196, billed as a Then and Now segment entitled The Stormy Menace of Goblin Head Rock. I guess the creators were losing patience with their setups, because Mala just removes the Venus girdle and is so pleased with her work reforming Priscilla Rich that her back's turned when her head is smashed with a rock. Through unknown means, Cheetah escaped Transformation Island, and within 3 days was already back in the States, stealing Professor Profundo's weather-controlling machine. Next, she's on the eastern seaboard, using the machine against a passenger ship called the Argosy. And of course, the Holiday Girls are the onboard band. Cheetah wrecks the ship on the jagged rocks of Goblin's Point, in what I feel is perhaps one of the most iconic Priscilla Rich single images. You can take the term iconic in its most literal sense, like a bathroom icon or a jaywalking icon. It's a narrow, page-long panel. The shipwreck is at the bottom. In the middle is the carved, rocky gray face of the Goblin Head Rock. In the distance is a lighthouse. But what's important is that Cheetah is in a silhouette that's little more than a stick figure, dancing atop the goblin. With her pointed ears and long tail, joyful in the carnage, complemented by the puckish bust, there's something very pagan and perhaps mildly satanic about the Cheetah. This moment really sets Priscilla Rich apart from all the Catwomen in comics. She's not just claws and roars. She's not about baubles or sex or stature. The Cheetah is a living trickster goddess, brimming with wickedness and spite and sadistic pleasure. She exists to dominate and belittle, to specifically show the inferiority of others even more than her own superiority, which has actually been shown to disempower her. The Cheetah is the queen of pettiness, only winning when someone else is losing in as embarrassing a fashion as possible. She has more in common with the Joker than Selina Kyle or Harvey Dent, a being that transcends villainy to become a symbol of anarchy, a force of unnatural malevolence, more than a flesh and blood character. In short, she's just such a prissy rich. There's really nowhere for the story to go from this literal peak. Wonder Woman shows up to rescue everybody aboard the Argosy. Cheetah hassles her. Steve gets pinned under the wreckage when he stupidly insists on going down in a diving suit in stormy weather. And he should have suffocated long before that when Cheetah cut his oxygen line. Because of course she did. The Amazon princess saves Steve. All our featured characters end up bound to the lighthouse and threatened with lightning. Slaves in miscolored zebra suits listen to Cheetah's war cry of, "Aiee!" Standard period Wonder Woman stuff. Also, Diana manages to break the lighthouse she's tied to with her golden lasso in half without also sawing through Steve and the Holiday Girls as well. Because that's how physics work. The girls beat up the zebras, but in a tiny penultimate panel, the cheetah stick figure returns to leap off Goblin Head Rock rather than surrender. Steve assumes, well, Angel, the cheetah is no more. Princess Diana insists,
dead? I can't believe it. People like the cheetah don't end their own lives.
Etta Candy offers the coda.
Oh, you said yourself, Wonder Woman, that uncontrollable power brings destruction. And they did.
We may never know where the stormy menace of Goblin Head Rock would have seen print, but in a weird way, I think it was better off in 1971. It's overall not the strongest of the Golden Age stories, but contrasted against the white jumpsuit era Diana Prince, it sure stood out. All of the other stories feature a hesitant or penitent Priscilla Rich getting returned to conditioning of some kind. In a callback to the very first Cheetah story, this one ends with her presumed death. In the Villainy Incorporated story, the various villainesses introduce themselves to the reader. In what initially seemed like an odd turn, our girl says,
I'm the Cheetah. Really, Priscilla Rich?
Think about that for a moment. Supposedly, Priscilla and Cheetah were two distinct personas that wanted to be rid of one another. Yet, in The Cheetah's Thought Prisoners, even under Paula's sway, Priscilla pictures herself as the Cheetah. If you read the Golden Age stories in the order presented here, you see a progressively less conflicted Priscilla, increasingly quick to return to the Cheetah persona, who strikes with less hesitation against the Amazon who tried to reform her. I suspect this last story was not by William Moulton Marston, and may have in fact been rejected by him for its bitter finale. Like Gene Roddenberry, Marston was always trying to present what he saw as the best in humanity, with boundless optimism for his characters. That isn't present here, as Priscilla Rich has either revealed her true depths or simply been subsumed by her alter ego. There is no Prill in this story, or more likely, there is only the truest version of her flawed character here. If Wonder Woman under Marston was guided by a wholehearted belief in loving submission, Cheetah represents the dark side of bondage, discipline, sadomasochism. She captures. She abuses. She has no regard for consent. She tortures and kills. As I get older, I've become something of a constitutional originalist when it comes to comics. Aside from women equal catty, I never got why Cheetah would be considered the most iconic Wonder Woman villain when there were better thematic options like Ares, Circe, and Dr. Psycho. Reading these stories, I finally get her. Diana is a foreign-born royal who earns her place in a supportive society through her actions, and is passionately motivated by a sense of noblesse oblige. Priscilla is the tacky American counterpart, an heiress handed everything whose every outreach to society is transactional in nature, and whose ultimate concern is always getting the most of whatever she feels she's naturally entitled to. For a man like Bill Marston, who built a personal and familial creed through bondage and submission, the Cheetah is the most literary opposite of his hogtied heroine. The Cheetah is a person who takes all the trust and faith inherent in the intimacy of BDSM and exploits it for her sole gratification with cruel, twisted, inhumane motivations. More than any other villain in her stable, the Priscilla Rich Cheetah is the dark mirror to Wonder Woman. In the past few years, we've seen a renaissance of classical imagery where Captain America has revisited his roots, punching nationalistic demagogues right in the kisser. There's also been a subgenre of memes where Wonder Woman socks a blonde-haired, orange-skinned id monster, and I now recognize that this is a similar return to form. Sorry again to everybody for the long wait for a new episode of the podcast. I was waiting for the movie to prompt me to do another episode, or I was waiting to get invited to a crossover. Neither has manifested in a year and a half, it seems like. So I kind of forgot, or I got busy doing other things. But we're back now, and I expect you'll be hearing more from us over the course of this next year for no other reason than, just like you, I'm just chomping at the bit to see Wonder Woman 1984. That's pretty much the only movie out this year that I'd be willing to brave a theater to go see. I don't know if I'm quite courageous enough to do it three or four times like I did with the first movie, but I will show up in a theater to see this just to say I did, and then hopefully live to tell the tale. And you know, I haven't been to a drive-in in better part of 40 years, so if I was going to break that long streak to see a movie, Wonder Woman 1984 would be a great one to do it with. So sending out love to the fourth Pip, the 108th Sage, Ali Batts, Andrew Werdna, Dr. Ange, Ask What Would Wonder Woman Do, Between the Pages, Brett Brock, Brody's Kitchen, Carlos Alberto, Cash Flag, Chris at Bad Books for Beginners, Chris Sheehan, Coffee and Comics Podcast, Comic Book Vault, Comic Reflections, Comics Couplets, Danny, DC Tweets, Dean Lonergan, Derek William Crabb, Ed Moore, Elisa McCausland, Felipe Alves de O, Glenn Hnutu Hill, Green Lantern HE Fighting the Good Fight, History of Comics on Film, Paul Hicks, Jacques Vial, Ian Gagal, LO456, Iowa's Joe Crawford, The Jedi Archive, hashtag Black Lives Matter, hashtag LGBT Rights, Jeffrey Brown, Karen Starr, LimeLink, Justice Trek 2020, Keith G. Baker, Kim Lazenby, Connell, ITG Graham, which is I'm the Gun, former podcaster, current Instagrammer, Martin Gray, Min, Nathaniel Devon Sanford, Professor Frenzy, Rad Adventures Podcasting Network, Randy Caldwell, who added, I sense a bit of a dislike for Barbara Minerva. That's cool. Relatively Geeky, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Rick Reed's Comics, Rob at Speculum Fight, Seer Wars and Beyond Podcast, who added, excellent topic, Post-Crisis Cheetah is a fascinating character, dare I say your discussion is spot on. Ziskoid, Talking Wonder Woman, Terrence Castingue, Varangian Vigilante, Walt Neeland, Warlord Worlds, Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace Podcast, who added, yay, I'm not alone anymore, and Xenozoic Xenophiles. Plus, we got a nice little comment from Martin Gray. She's basically Roseanne Barr as played by Joan Collins. Brilliant. Thanks for a fascinating show. So much research. Your conclusion that Barbara Ann Minerva is basically crap is an opinion I've held since her first appearance. Yep, that origin is vile, and repositioning the cheetah villain as a super speed werewolf makes her less original and interesting. And Diana's constantly forgiving attitude really hurts Wonder Woman. Give me a tricky woman in a faux fur catsuit anytime. I really wouldn't get head up about her inconsistent power levels in her many guest appearances and guest spots. Is there a single DC villain who doesn't get constantly mistreated outside their home books? By the way, since the last podcast, I actually got to meet Martin and his spouse. We had a great time, ate some fish, chatted up in the hotel room. It's always nice when you can meet up with folks you've been friendly with online for ages. Wonder Woman is the copyright of DC Comics Entertainment. This is a non-profit, fan-produced podcast. No infringement of any copyrights are intended. And where copyrighted material appears, it is believed protected under fair use. If you enjoy the show, please feel free to leave a comment on the Diana Prince is the New Wonder Woman blog, the Rolled Spine podcast blog. Write to me at emailofdiabolu@yahoo.com, featuring two underscores. Or just hit me up on Twitter at Commander Blanks or at Rolled Spine. Thank you for listening and have a wonderful week.
Oh, I don't know. I have this thing where, you know, everyone's like, oh, Batman will always win. It's like, guys, he doesn't need, he's only alive because Clark has not decided to laser his brain from space. I mean, really, people. The thing with, you know, Batman will always win is just so overplayed to me. But
you're speaking to the choir. My thing is that I understand that Batman has an inferior complex, especially as a member of the Justice League, because, like, well, what are you going to do when you're around all these gods? And so the thing they did is why they try to hype up his intellect. And then Batmania happened, and Batman was like the superhero, one of the first superheroes that really made it over into live action. And so, of course, all of a sudden everybody thought Batman is the greatest, and they wanted to see him do really awesome stuff, and yet he's still surrounded by these gods. And so it's pretty much been steadily since then amping up Batman to make up for that inferiority complex to the point where he's supposed to be able to beat everybody now. And of course, yet somehow he's also supposed to be really realistic and really attainable, even though he's a billionaire who has all the time in the world to train and can still somehow do stuff that should be completely impossible no matter how much training you have. Yeah, it's frustrating. You know, it is a fantasy, but that's a level of fantasy that even I can't, you know, approach, because these are gods. You're surrounded by gods. You're surrounded by people that are faster than literally faster than a speeding bullet. What's a dude with a belt supposed to do against that? I don't get where that comes from. Most Wonder Woman villains should be able to take Batman fairly easily, and they can definitely take it. Like, it kills me whenever, like, the Joker shows up and tries to hassle Wonder Woman, because, like, dude, you're not at your level, man. You're so above your station right now. She should be able to she whips her lasso around, she blows whatever gas or venom you shoot at her, you get hit by it, she punches you, and it's over with. It should be like about as long as a Hostess pie ad, you know?
Yeah. Man, I'm wondering what would happen to Joker if he got wrapped up in the lasso of truth. That would be interesting to see. See him forced to confront the truth of all the stuff he's done. And
yeah, I think he's such a dude bro at this point, though. It'd be like a red pill, blue pill thing where he's like, no, I know the truth. My truth is deeper than your truth. I think he'd be like a total jackass about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it depends on how the lasso works, whether it it just makes you tell the truth, as in what you think is true, or it makes you tell the truth even if you don't want to admit the truth or you don't know the truth or something well, like but that. That's it the depends on how powerful you want to make the lasso.
That's what's always been tricky, though, is truth and fact aren't the same thing. So I think it would actually be down to your personal truth. And you can deny yourself. I'm thinking about, like, I was just recently, for Cheetah Ref research, I was reading the stories where Vanessa Capitalis becomes a Silver Swan. And, of course, her personal truth is that she loves Wonder Woman. She doesn't want to be a villainess and hurt her. But her brain's been messed up by all this untruth that's been filled up in her mind. So I think in a situation like that, it would cut through to her personal truth. But with the Joker, I think he's living his truth relative to his mental, state. And so I don't think it would actually make much of a difference to him. I think he already is, he's not in denial. He's just wackadoo.
Yeah. I don't know. Wasn't there one time where, like, Martian Manhunter set his brain right and he was like, oh my goodness, what have I done?
Well, yeah, I guess so. But it's not a lasso of cognitive functionality or something.
That's true.
Yeah, so it's I don't know. I think that this is the sort of thing that you could definitely have a nice long debate about, but I don't want to talk about the Joker for that long.
Right. Sorry, we are getting off track.